So today we're joined by political reporter for The Guardian, Amy Romekas. Thank you so much for joining us today, Amy. It's wonderful to have you on the podcast. So before becoming a political reporter, you had some time working in police and court rounds. How often did you face potential media law issues doing that type of work?
Quite frequently, because unless you're across the law, you can find yourself accidentally reporting something that should not be in the public domain, particularly with court cases. So if you weren't paying attention in court, and in Queensland courts when I was covering them, you weren't allowed to record, so everything had to come from your own notes. Or you may have been covering multiple cases at a time because newsrooms don't have endless resources. So often you would be running from the magistrate's court in Roma Street to, you know, the Supreme Court or the district court over on George. So you'd often come in and maybe have missed something, and you might have missed an injunction on what you could report on. And often judges will just say those very quickly and mumble and matter-of-factly. And if you're not paying attention, you could accidentally find that you've reported on an aspect of a court case that was never meant to be in the public domain. And that can have huge ramifications. I've seen reporters hauled in front of the court for doing exactly that. I've seen journalists not think and try to interview jurors as they've left the courtroom about what was happening, again, which can derail a court case and just have massive ramifications. But also, particularly with police reporting, if you are friendly enough with your police sources, they can often tell you information that they shouldn't be telling you. And if you put that into your story, even if you're not attributing it to the police, you're potentially putting in information that could have an impact on future court cases. And so you have to have an understanding of the law and of what you can report, especially if you become a federal reporter and you're reporting on a case in another jurisdiction. So in Queensland, you can't name rape or sexual assault victims. That's not the case in every jurisdiction, but it does mean that often you will find a Sydney-based reporter or a Melbourne-based reporter making mistakes where they apply the same laws to their jurisdiction to a case that's happening in Queensland. So the fact that the Federation makes it quite difficult in covering court cases and police cases, because you have to understand the jurisdiction. In the ACT, for instance, there was an issue when charges were brought against the man who allegedly raped Brittany Higgins. In the ACT, you can only name a rape survivor if they give explicit consent. And so organizations, including the one I work for, The Guardian, named Brittany, but she had not yet given consent at that particular point in time. And so it was an honest mistake, because people were like, well, you know, this has been spoken about, but technically it was against ACT law. So there's all of these little things that you have to consider, and a correction in the newspaper or on the bulletin the next night doesn't always make it right. So you have to be very, very careful when you cover these spaces.
How much do you think that social media has now made that more complex?
It's made it a lot more complex, because often websites can pull down something if something has happened. If a court case, progresses to a point where you've previously identified someone who now can no longer be identified because of the particular court case, you'll often see newspapers and websites pull down any previous story on that case. It's really hard to pull down a tweet. It's really hard to go through all of the comments on news organizations' Facebook page and make sure that nobody has listed off something that they shouldn't there. All of it counts as being detrimental to court cases. All of it is publishing. So often you might word a very carefully worded tweet that you send out into the world, but then people will quote tweet it and say, that why aren't you naming this person? Why don't you name this person? Why are you protecting this person? They don't understand that you can't because it's the law. And they also don't understand that they're breaking it by publishing that tweet, because Twitter, Facebook, all of the social media platforms are publishing platforms privy to the same rules. So you'll often see journalists now, when they tweet information out, and it is part of our job to be on social media and to pass on information that way, you'll often see that they will turn off replies and really limit who can say what about it. You can't always get around it with quote tweets, but I think the calculation there is you didn't say it, the person who quote tweeted it did. So hopefully that will be enough to stop a judge from hauling you in front of a court.
Yeah, and it's a tricky space because it's not something that's necessarily been tested. Reducing comments on social media is only a relatively new thing. One thing I do want to talk about is we're a part of a society that has this immense intrigue when it comes to these significant cases. And then they often comment on things without thinking about those impacts that their words can have on the court cases. What do you think is the most prominent legal issue that users of social media don't consider?
It would be probably defamation. I don't think people really understand how easy it is to defame somebody. That can just be, you know, in some instances, name calling. It can be using the word liar. It can be, you know, quote tweeting something else and incorrectly attributing it to them. It's anything really that could potentially damage a reputation or that person's standing in society, which is really, really dangerous when you see what is written on social media. And people often think that they're protected because they're anonymous or that it's social media and people don't particularly care. But there are ways and means of tracking down people. And I think we're starting to see the federal government in particular investigate those ways and means they can actually track down people. And that's a real terrifying thought for Australia's democracy, where we have politicians actively working on censoring social media because of what they say is the defamation risk. They're masking it under trolling, but it really all of the laws that they're writing up focus on defamation. So that's probably the number one thing that people don't consider. I think people also don't consider the consequences of inaccurate information that they put out, not necessarily knowing their sources. We saw a lot of that during the pandemic, where people were saying that their friend was a nurse and heard XYZ, and this particular chief health officer is lying because they said XYZ in a hospital. And so you would see those sorts of things begin to take hold, and whole narratives being built on social media about people, who they were allegedly related to, you know, what they were allegedly saying in their off time, who they were allegedly sleeping with in some cases. And you see that start to build up in certain areas of social media. And then you start to see elements of that being published, not necessarily on mainstream media, but on some of the other, I suppose, more citizen journalist-led media sites. And that can be potentially very dangerous as well. And I think the other thing that people don't take into account with social media is that in a lot of cases it's there forever and it doesn't disappear. And you can't just delete a tweet and whatever you've said disappears with it. Often a deleted tweet has been screenshot in the instant that it was sent, and you'll find it included in defamation action against you. Or people draw bows too far on information that they've read in a story to say, well, this is what this is, and it will be wrong. And we saw that most recently with Andrew Lamming, one of the Queensland MPs who was accused of upskirting. And it wasn't upskirting, upskirting being a crime in the Queensland Criminal Code. So he was able to send out successfully defamation notices on people who he said had impacted his reputation and his public standing. And they were in the wrong because they had drawn conclusions from news reports that were not correct. So I believe the journalist, or at least the network, is also facing legal action over those original stories. And now you also have social media users and other journalists also facing legal action. And often people think that that's quite a safe space. If they've read it in a news story, it must be fine. And that's not always the case. And that's why you really need to listen to your gut and stop and reflect before you hit publish on any form of social media, because something that you have said in the heat of a moment can come back and have pretty big ramifications for you.
Yeah, and obviously you've talked a bit there about defamation, and obviously now working in that political field, how do you tackle being open and honest about politics and politicians, but ensure that you don't cross that defamation legal boundary?
I think it's difficult, and I think most media organisations now have their own in-house lawyers who will often send out notes saying, you know, do not tweet on XYZ for these reasons, or we're about to publish a story. The headline, everything, the stand first, which is the little like paragraph that might sit underneath the headline, all of that has been legaled. Do not change it. Do not add to it. So we know that there's potential legal issues around something that we might be tweeting. And so having an understanding of defamation law is crucial in all reporting now, not just political, and just really thinking about the consequences of you firing off that particular tweet. So if media organizations are now so worried that they have lawyers who sit in the office saying you cannot change the headline, the stand first, or anything in this story because we've extensively legaled it. And that doesn't mean that it can't be challenged in court. It just means that your lawyers have come up with a defense if it is challenged in court, and they have, you know, the receipts, if you will. Often when you write a story and you have to deal with the lawyers, they go through it line by line, and you have to back up absolutely every single word in that story, and they'll make little changes and you'll be like, but it's true. And they'll be like, but you don't have, you know, the evidence of that. Like, you need to be able to actually prove it conclusively. And you're like, ugh. But ultimately they're right. And so they'll change little words because they're worried about the imputation. So if newsrooms are now going to that extent, you need to apply that same diligence to tweets on other issues that your newsroom may not be covering. And I think that is a pretty good way of handling defamation. So if I don't know something personally, I don't comment on it. If I have not been able to independently verify a particular story or have the allegation repeated to me, I do not report it and I do not tweet about it. If I have not been able to have firsthand knowledge of something, then I am not going to tweet it. And it's little things like that, because even attributing it to someone, even saying, you know, Sky News reports, blah, 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 you could still find yourself mentioned somewhere because you have continued, you know, you've spread that story. Not that Sky News is, you know, being sued to my knowledge, but I'm just using it as an example. You have spread that story onwards. And so that is why you need to be very, very careful and make sure that you can back up absolutely anything that you say. And that means you have to be really careful about what you call people and what you allow others to call people and what you are alleging that somebody has done, because just putting alleged does not protect you in a court of law.
Very, very true. So many examples of news articles or headlines that have got the word alleged. Very, very small, but they think that's what's going to cover them. You mentioned before something about listening to your gut. Do you have specific triggers that make those alarm bells ring regarding defamation or any media law topic?
I suppose it's hard to put a finger on what all they are. Sometimes it's just it doesn't feel right, or it's not something that I've heard of before. And if it's in the space that I cover, it's my job to hear these things, even if they're just rumors or, you know, something like that. So if it's come out of left field, I'm kind of like, oh, where is that come from? And it just makes me stop and just, you know, do a lot more research before I actually, you know, tweet anything. Also, I consider the source of the information. A lot of very long bows can be drawn, particularly in headlines. And it's really easy just to look at a headline in your social media feed and make a draw a conclusion about what that article is about or what somebody is allegedly saying in this article, and then, you know, fire off a tweet in response to that. And often the headline has got absolutely nothing to do with the story. And that's something that I think people really need to be aware of, because people may remember that Fairfax got sued for Treasurer for Sale, the headline that they had for a Joe Hockey story quite a few years ago. And in the end, the court ruled that the story was accurate. There was nothing wrong with the story, but people reading the headline in isolation and the, you know, how they advertise that headline in news agencies, if they read that in isolation without reading the story, then they could potentially draw imputations that the story did not, and therefore it was defamatory. So just knowing little quirks of the law like that can get you into trouble, I think, can really give you some sort of idea of what those triggers are for, oh, this tweet could get me into trouble. Perhaps I should just, you know, hold off and just have a look at it. It's really just a feeling where I'm just all like, ooh, might just leave that one. And then just see what happens.
That's really, really good advice, because it is about listening to your gut. It's about recognizing when something doesn't feel right, and then searching for the reason why. Finally, I just wanted to quickly chat about the findings of the Dylan Bowler case. Obviously, this has set some very new ground for social media professional journalism, or anyone hosting a social media page. Do you have any comments or thoughts about the outcome of that particular case?
Well, first of all, I think that media organisations did fail, and there is a lot of comments on their social media pages which should not be there. They're just abuse, or they're just trolling. And you can't just say, oh, well, we just put the forum, we're not actually saying this, and then just let it be, because we know that people can be particularly vile, particularly if they don't have their own name to it. And any social justice issue or anything to do with Indigenous Australians or people of colour or certain religions or just, you know, sexual orientations, any of that, trans kids, there is going to be a lot of vile, vile commentary that comes along with that. And it is the responsibility of anyone who hosts a site to make sure that those comments do not see the light of day. So I can see why the court ruled as it did. I can see why media companies have just had a complete freak out about it, though, because resources being what they are, it means that you constantly have to have somebody monitoring your social media page, or you don't publish comments immediately. You pre-moderate them, which also takes a lot of time, not just physical time. It weighs on moderators emotionally as well, because they are dealing with a lot of venom on a daily basis. They're seeing some of the worst of humanity when you have to pre-moderate something, and that's having a huge impact on them as well. It's not something you can do for 9 to 5 or, you know, whatever shift that you're on. You need a break from seeing that sort of stuff. They also have to think about the legal ramifications of any, you know, comment that they do hit publish on too. So it's a huge responsibility that we're placing on people that we don't necessarily pay that much as well. Anyone who pays attention to media ads will see that there's always content moderation jobs going. And that's because the burnout for people who do that job is incredibly high. So it's an issue for media companies, because they don't know how to moderate the thousands and thousands of comments that they get in ways that are in line with the law. And it's an issue for society, because we shouldn't ever be having those sorts of vile opinions being published. So often you just see media companies just turn off comments. So at The Guardian, we're quite lucky. Our audience is quite nice and engaged, and we don't get a huge amount of abuse in our comments. But we will turn off comments on stories or the blog or our social media feeds if there is even the hint of legal action associated with it. So there's been several high profile political cases in the last 2 years. If one of the people involved's name is mentioned in an article, even if it's unrelated, we will turn off comments, because there is every chance that somebody will say something they shouldn't about a court case or an allegation, not necessarily meaning to cause an issue, but just because they're just like, why isn't anyone talking about this? And you're kind of like, we don't talk about it because there is a huge legal issue here and we actually can't. So I think the Vola case does have a lot of ramifications. I don't think that fighting the outcome and having it, having news organizations not responsible for the comments on their pages is the answer. Because that doesn't actually do anything except absolve responsibility from the news organizations or the social media publishers for what is being put onto their platform. If it's under your masthead, if it's under your network, you are responsible for it. So either invest in content moderation properly and have people trained to actually go through the comments, or turn the comments off, because freedom of speech isn't a protected right in Australia. And it's also not something that is owed to people. There are consequences for whatever it is that you say. And if one of those consequences is that people can no longer fire off a vile comment in response to a news story that they most likely haven't read, well, then so be it.
Certainly touched on many of the topics that we talk about in media law. Thank you so much for your time. It's been wonderful to have this chat about these media law issues and to get your insights from your experience. Thank you again.